You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, Episode 2. We're talking rookie tournaments, picking between two specific prospects and our guest, Russ Cohen. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to Episode 2 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. Thanks for downloading and listening. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show or email us at prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. Now let's get into the show. Peter, how's it going?
It's going very well, Paul. Thanks. How are you?
Busy. Busy with rookie tournaments going on, eh?
Indeed it is. Hockey is back. World Championship, rookie tournaments, CHL is right around the corner. Hockey's back, man.
Yeah, so you've been busy with the rookie tournaments. How has your viewing been going?
It's been going pretty well. The great thing about technology today with the media is I can watch a lot of games and cover a bunch of rookie tournaments. And thanks to, you know, teams posting games on Facebook and Leafs TV for broadcasting their tournament, it makes it a lot easier, a lot less traveling.
Yeah, so speaking of Leafs TV, they were showing the rookie tournament out of London. So who'd you see? What'd you like?
Let's start with the Habs. They had a number of players that were very impressive, but none more so than Mikhail Sergachev. He was dominant in the game he played against the Ottawa Senators. He was a standout. You can see that he is thinking and seeing the game at a level that's far above the competition that was in that tournament. He was plus vision and setting the pace. He made a really nice coast-to-coast break where he picked up the puck, a loose puck on his own goal line, skated it all the way up the ice. None of the Leafs really had an opportunity to get too close to him. His skating is just excellent. His vision and agility allowed him to find the seam and thread the needle between the open players. And then he made a beautiful dish pass to Audet for a tap-in goal. He did it all. He had some hits. He played really well defensively. And then he got injured. He took a blindside, pretty dirty hit from Senators Francis Perron. Another player from Montreal that scored a beauty goal was Nikita Sherbak. He went through the neutral zone, deked the pants out of the defenseman with a fake to go to the inside, pulled it between his legs and went to the outside and cut in front of the net and scored a goal. It was awesome. He showed a lot. Tried to show a physical edge as well. He got into a bit of a pushing match with Senators Andreas Englund, pushed him down to the ice. Sherbak came up kind of swinging, and they ended up getting into a full-on fight, and that is not what is going to get him into the NHL. He lost that fight badly.
Oh, that's not good.
No. Michael McCarron and Noah Yulson are two other Habs players that really stood out. Sergachev and McCarron in particular, I think, could play in the NHL right now. Montreal might not want to rush. Sergachev plays for Windsor, so he'll have a chance to play in the Memorial Cup if he goes back to the OHL this year. He'll be World Junior eligible for another season. So Montreal's going to... He played well enough that he could really give them a difficult decision if he's not too injured. He left the game from that hit. Looked like, hopefully, just... You know, it's a rookie tournament, so concussion protocol, better safe than sorry. Hopefully he'll be good to go for training camp.
Yeah, I have a feeling they'll send him back to Windsor just to get that Memorial Cup experience, especially since they're hosting, so he's guaranteed to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And for him to crack the NHL roster, he's got some pretty good competition there. Montreal's defense isn't too shabby. Moving on to Ottawa. I touched briefly on Vince Dunn and his dirty hit on Sergachev. He was in goon mode the whole tournament. He was looking to fight his way into the NHL roster. He was throwing all kinds of hits, big hits, clean hits, dirty hits. He got in several fights. He might have actually been successful. It might be good enough to get him at least a good hard look at training camp, and maybe at least an AHL gig to start the season. He doesn't have a whole lot of fantasy offensive upside, but for leagues that are really, really deep and have categories for the greasy stats, hits particularly in penalty minutes, Vince Dunn could be an option there.
So do you think he'll like replace Chris Neal in Ottawa? Is that what you're trying to go for?
Yeah, in time he could, yeah. His skating would have to be sufficient enough in order for him to make the NHL, but he certainly is a willing combatant. So when Chris Neal is ready to hang him up, which could be in another year or two, Vince Dunn might be a guy that gets that look. Your guy last week from episode one, we did our little three prospects to watch, and you commented on Francis Perron. He had two goals in the tournament. He scored a really nice goal. I was thinking of you when he scored it.
Nice.
Yeah. He got a centering pass in the slot, and it was a great pass. It was right in his wheelhouse, and he just drained it right to the back of the net. That was a goal scorer's goal, so that was a good one. Another prospect for Ottawa that I was really watching was Nick Paul. He looked very good. All aspects of his game looked great. He's got size. He skates very well. He was really strong on the face-off. He's great along the boards. He can drive to the net. He's got a big body. He can stand in front of the net and cause a little bit of a screen, a little bit of havoc. He's a little slow to score at the beginning of the tournament, though. He ended up with two goals in the last game. But for a player that's got NHL experience from last season, I was kind of expecting him to dominate a little bit more offensively. And for him to get above a bottom six pairing in the NHL, he's going to have to really elevate his goal-scoring ability. He's got a nice shot. He's got a good release. He gets good velocity and accuracy on it. He just maybe needs the confidence to use it a little bit more, or maybe find a little bit more time to get himself open for it. In the meantime, he's got to stand in front of the net. And I think most of the goals he scores in the NHL are going to come from about 2 feet of the blue paint. A lot of tips, a lot of rebounds, and greasy goals.
Nice. So Toronto went 3-0. They brought about 30 guys to the tournament. I was looking at the rosters, and I did a ramblings on the rosters, the preview. So yeah. Who stood out in those 30-some-odd prospects?
Well, it was easier for some of the other teams' prospects to stand out because they played every game, and the Leafs basically had two teams. So they played about four games, so each guy got about two games. Of course, it was in London, so all the London Knights fans and all the Toronto Maple Leafs fans, all eyes were on Mitch Marner. And, I thought he was meh.
Really?
Yeah, he was good. He didn't dominate the play. There's been times where people have watched him play, and especially in the Memorial Cup in the playoffs last year, and you watch this kid play, and he is just electric. He's making plays that you don't see coming, passes that you're like, oh my god, where did that come from? He didn't do too much of that this tournament. He didn't light up the score sheet. He didn't look out of place. But when I watched him play, I didn't say there's no way they can send that guy back down to junior.
Huh. So do you think it was due to pressure, not knowing if that was going to be his last time in London, or do you think too much pressure being on his shoulders that everybody thinks he's going to play in the NHL, or just didn't show up for the three games?
I think he was just getting his feet wet, and like I said, they only played two games. It's a rookie tournament, and who knows what the coaches' directions were. The coaches might be saying, look, we know you can score, we know you can make plays, what we really want you to show us in this tournament is your ability to play other aspects of the game. What we'll be watching is your defensive positioning, etc., etc., etc. So because he didn't light up the score sheet doesn't necessarily mean he's not ready. Like I said, he didn't look bad. He just didn't dominate offensively like everyone would think he would.
I guess that's the problem with a lot of people looking on the outside. They just look at box scores or they look at recaps, and mostly recaps are just who scores, who gets the assist, not a lot of who played well, who was better defensively. So thankfully, using pretty much every single game, you got to see that Marner is still great. He's just
That's
not
right.
putting it on not putting it in the net.
Yeah, there's no red flags in his game. He played well. He made offensive scoring chances, and he did get some points, but he just didn't, you know, he didn't look like he should be a Calder candidate, and there's no way he's going back to junior. He might not. And I think expectations were so high. Everyone was expecting him to light it up, and he just didn't. But some other players also for the Leafs stood out a little bit. Trevor Moore. He is a undrafted prospect that Toronto invited to their prospect camp, I believe it was, early this summer. And he's got a contract now. He was an interesting player. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. There's nothing really about his game physically that really stood out to me as like, wow, how come this guy wasn't drafted? And yet he was in on plays. He was making things happen. He's got great vision in NHL, or maybe not NHL, but hockey sense. So he turned some heads. And another player that I watched was Frédéric Gauthier, a former first round pick by the Leafs, made the Canadian World Junior roster, and the Leafs have got a lot of flack for drafting him as high as they did. He doesn't have a high offensive ceiling, and when they drafted him, his skating was pretty choppy. But watching him in the Marlies last year, in his first year as a pro, and watching him in this tournament, he's one of the better players on the Leafs roster. Again, not offensively. Kind of reminds me a little bit of David Steckel, if you remember him.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby may or may not remember him. He's big. He's really improved his skating. His defensive play is excellent. He can make a great fourth line center. He's great on draws. You know, if you can get a player in the, like, late in the first round that plays several seasons for your team, even in a fourth line, there's nothing wrong with that. So that was those were some of my main takeaways from London.
All right. So out of that whole tournament, what was one guy's who had the highest stock rise in your mind? In that whole four teams, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, Pittsburgh?
I don't know if I'd say his stock rose so much because it was already pretty high, but that game I watched, Montreal and Ottawa, it was the Mikhail Sergachev show.
Nice.
He was dominating that game, and he only played two periods because he left the game with the injury, but yeah, that he made a lasting impression.
All right, cool. All right, let's move on to Traverse City. Carolina Hurricanes take home the championship this year. They beat Detroit in the final game. That's pretty exciting. Carolina, who stood out to you?
All right, for Carolina, one of the players, I watched him play in the queue last year a couple of times, and I really like this guy, and I think his fantasy value is high too. And that's Julien Gauthier. He is the Carolina's first round pick this summer. He went 21st overall. He's shown that he can score at a higher level. He's a goal scorer, power forward, big strong guy, comes from a family of like bodybuilders, and he's got a man's body already. He might have an outside chance of playing some games in the NHL to start this year, and you know, in those nine games, who knows what you can do. But he's got the size and the skating that those two components of his game are NHL ready now. And his shot is probably pretty close.
Yeah, who'd he lay out? He flipped him over the boards. Do you remember that? Did you see that highlight?
No,
he laid a guy out and everybody was just like, this guy is built for the NHL. Like, he's got a man's body. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see what Carolina does with him.
Indeed. Jani Kukkonen was their... hope I'm pronouncing that name right. He's their Carolina's second round pick. He went 43rd overall. He's turned some heads in this tournament. He played a little bit of pro last year in Finland. I haven't actually seen him play live. I did catch him in the U18 tournament, TSN broadcast. I was able to see that from North Dakota, and he was pretty strong for them. And apparently he had a very good tournament for Carolina as well. He's been selected by the London Knights in the CHL import draft. He was their first round 56th overall pick. So London's got the Midas touch. If they drafted this guy, he's got to be good, right?
Yeah, and that means you're going to be able to see him a lot more if he goes back to the O.
That's right. Well, I'm pretty sure that's where he's going, yeah.
Yeah.
But he'd be a good prospect to put in stash on your prospect bench. He might come along sooner than later. You know, the guys that come over from Europe, he's already played a little bit of pro. 1 year in the CHL would be his North American adjustment. And then, you know, this time next year, he could be knocking on the NHL's door.
Yeah, so the New York Rangers won the Jimmy Vesey lottery pick, or the Jimmy Vesey watch that was all over offseason. Did they actually win? Was it a win?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they got him for nothing, right? They didn't give up anything to get him. And all he did was walk into this tournament with, you know, the weight of the world on his shoulders with all this hype and everything. And in four games, he could only manage 5 goals and 7 points to lead the tournament in scoring.
That's it?
Yeah, it's not very good.
Wow.
Yeah. Detroit had a couple of players that I'm really keen on, and I was interested to see how they did as well. Tyler Bertuzzi. He had 4 goals, and he's a little pest. He's a bit of a buzzsaw on the ice. The other team hates him. Your team loves him. He'd be great in multi-cat fantasy leagues. Hits. He's a winger, but he was even taking draws for Detroit in this tournament and winning a fair number of them. So if you can get a winger that takes face-offs, that's amazing. And he had 4 goals, 5 points, 17 shots. So I think Tyler Bertuzzi could be another gem Detroit Red Wings prospect that works his way onto their roster sooner than later. And they drafted Giovanni Smith this summer in Buffalo. I see him play in the OHL. He's a very robust player. He's big. He skates, I wouldn't say great, but pretty good for a guy his size. He needs to be more disciplined because he took some penalties, some bad penalties. Detroit was down, and he took some unnecessary penalties when they're trying to rally for a comeback. But he can score some goals in close. He's very good in front of the net. So he's another prospect that I would put on the radar as well.
All right, cool. So the rookie showcase in Penticton was Colorado, Anaheim, and San Jose. Colorado was the host, and they won 2-0. You can check out our recap on DauberProspects.com. Zachary Devine was there, and he was there the whole weekend scouting. So we're not going to cover them because Zach did a wicked job of posting that. So let's go to the Young Stars tournament in... Oh, did I say
that? Was in Penticton. Yeah. That's all right.
Sorry about that, Peter. So the Young Stars tournament, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Winnipeg. What'd you see there?
So these games were broadcast on Facebook. A couple of the teams' Facebook pages broadcast them, and the feed was actually very good.
Interesting.
It was free, and yeah, it's on your phone, so depending on what kind of phone you have. Anyways, the Vancouver Canucks, they got a gem of a goalie in Thatcher Demko. He is the real deal. He looked solid. He's a pretty big goalie. He's really good positionally. He doesn't give the shooters a lot to shoot at, and he's very athletic. He was dominant in NCAA last year. He played out his college career. Vancouver was quick to sign him. He'll be the number one goalie for them in the AHL this year. And he'll be knocking on the NHL's door very, very soon. Vancouver doesn't need to worry if Ryan Miller gets an injury and if Father Time catches up with him sooner than later and they don't have all the faith in the world in Jakob Markstrom. Thatcher Demko is going to be amazing. If he's available in your fantasy leagues and it's a keeper league and you've got a little bit of space on a prospect bench, don't hesitate to take him. They also signed an unrestricted free agent out of college, Troy Stetcher. He's turned some heads. He looked very good. He made the transition from college to pro look easy. He's close to NHL ready, actually, is what a friend told me. He's got fantasy upside too. He carried the play offensively. He was reliable two-way, played big. So there's the two guys from Vancouver that if they're not picked in your league, you might want to take a look at them.
All right, and Edmonton went 3-0. Who stood out for Edmonton?
Well, the obvious one would be the fourth overall pick, Jesse Puljujärvi. He scored a beauty goal. It did the rounds on social media and Twitter. He was the best player on Edmonton for sure, and he was the best player in the tournament out of the whole four team roster. He probably could have played in the World Cup. He's that good.
Yeah, do you think he had a little chip on his shoulder in this tournament because he didn't get selected to the World Cup team?
I would think so. I
Yeah.
mean, he's a competitive guy, right? So,
Well, him and Patrick Laine were head to head pretty much all season in the Liga, so I could see him being a little upset about that.
yeah. At the NHL draft, I was listening to Pete Chiarelli in a media interview, and someone asked him. He said, "So will Jesse Puljujärvi be the Yari Kurri to McDavid's Gretzky?" And Chiarelli couldn't keep the smile off his face. It was awesome. He tried really hard not to smile, but he couldn't keep it down. He's like, "There's some similarities there, yeah." He
Wow.
smiled and nodded. So, if you're fortunate enough to get Jesse Puljujärvi in your fantasy draft, oh, you missed out on Matthews. Damn, you missed out on Laine. You're good. You are solid with Jesse Puljujärvi.
Yeah, you think you'd take him number three over Pierre-Luc Dubois or
Oh yeah,
yeah?
yeah. I mean, he's
So
playing with McDavid.
yeah, so did Columbus make a mistake taking Dubois over
No, the
Puljujärvi?
reason why I take Puljujärvi over Dubois is because the scenario. Dubois playing with Cam Atkinson and Sonny Milano, and
Good point.
Puljujärvi's playing with McDavid. One more player from Edmonton, Matt Benning, might not be as household a name as Jesse Puljujärvi. It's easier to pronounce though. He's another UFA out of NCAA, and like Stecher, he's close to being NHL ready. He could make a debut this season at some point and have a cup of coffee. He had good reads. He played gritty, and he's got some skill to go with it. Didn't look out of place.
Interesting. So Winnipeg Jets have a pretty good set of prospects, and they went 0-3 in this tournament. What happened?
Well, the other teams have some pretty good prospects too, and a lot of the really good prospects that Winnipeg have graduated. So
Yeah, I
there's
guess that's
that.
true. Yeah.
But they did have one of the most talented players in the tournament, being Kyle Connor. He came as advertised. He's going to make the Jets this year.
Oh, that'd be nice. That's exciting.
Yeah, I don't. Winnipeg's got a good team, and they got a lot of good young players, but it's hard to keep a guy like that off the roster. Not much to not like there. One player that is a little bit unclear where he's going to play next year is Jack Roslovic. His NA junior rights, sorry, were traded to the London Knights. So I have no idea where he's going to play this year. It's not going to be in Winnipeg, but I'm hoping that it's London.
Yeah, and the
They're
Knights just get better.
rich get richer. He
Yeah.
played on a line with Kyle Connor. He was good on faceoffs. He was good along the boards, strong in puck battles, and he was very persistent on the forecheck. He's one of those players that's got a motor. Gus would love him. He's got some drive. He'll make it, just not this year. One guy that didn't have a good tournament was Logan Stanley, their 2016 pick. He looked slow. His skating, his feet were slow, and he was struggling to make good long stretch passes, good passes out of the zone transition. And that's what the NHL defense is all about these days. It's defensemen that can recover the puck and transition it to offense. His thinking process seems slow. His development last year in the OHL was good. It was significant. It was good enough to get him drafted in the first round, and no one batted an eye at that. And I don't think that I'm calling him a bust here. He's just nowhere near NHL ready at this point. And also his fantasy value is very low. So if you were on the fence about Logan Stanley, thinking about should I draft him and stash him on my prospect bench, I would say no.
All right, so that's pretty much our rookie camp recap of pretty much all the camps that have now finalized. There's still some going on, I know that. Our ramblings on DauberProspects.com, we've been covering it like crazy. When we come back, we're going to break down two different prospects, one question, and find out who Peter and I side with. That's when we come back. This week on Prospect Feature, who would you rather? We're going to give you two different prospects, one question, find out who I like, and find out who Peter likes. So, first question, who plays top six in Chicago? Tyler Mott or Nick Schmaltz? Peter, what's your pick?
This one's a coin toss, really. But I think because I drafted in the DP FHL, I'm going to have to go with Tyler Mott. Both these guys are turning first-year pros, but Mott has got a little bit of weight on him over Schmaltz. He's only 5'9", but he's 192. He had a dominant season for Michigan last year. He scored 32 goals, 56 points in 28 games, including a 12-game goal-scoring streak. Finished the season playing in the AHL. He got a 5-game cup of coffee at the pros, and he scored 2 goals and had 5 points there. And then he scored a little bit more in the playoffs. He was also named to Team USA for the World Cup, and he's a Hobie Baker finalist. I like Tyler Mott to play on a line with Jonathan Toews.
All right. I'm going to go with Nick Schmaltz. I actually think he's going to be a second centerman behind Jonathan Toews, which will help him get into the top six because Chicago needs a second-line center. So I really do think Nick Schmaltz is going to be a 1A, 1B to Jonathan Toews eventually. Chicago's really deep at wing, so that's why I went with Schmaltz being the top six, because I think Chicago's got their wings lined up for a couple more years. So that's why I think Nick Schmaltz is going to make this Chicago team.
Interesting. You know, they both could make it. In fact, they both will. It's just which one will make it in the top six permanently. Yeah. They might alternate. We'll call it a draw.
Well, in their NCAA careers, they're both almost a point per game, 105 and 107 for Mott, and 72 points and 75 for Schmaltz. So they're both big-time scorers, so you really can't go wrong with either one. So it's kind of good that we went either or. All right, so who has bigger long-term value in multi-cat keeper leagues, Mikko Rantanen or Nick Ritchie?
Long-term, huh? I'll tell you what. I'll give you Rantanen. I think he's going to have a far greater impact this year in Colorado. But I got a bit of a soft spot for Nick Ritchie. I watched him play a lot with the Peterborough Petes when he was there. And this guy can just dominate a game. And he can do it at the pro level, too. He played 30 games in the NHL in his rookie pro season. He scored 16 goals and 30 points in 38 games in the AHL last year. He's too good for the AHL, and he could play through his beginning part of his career while they're still relevant on a top line with Getzlaff and Perry. In a multi-cat league, this guy dishes out hits like he's going out of style. He score goals, he's got a wicked shot, and he's an underrated playmaker too. I like Nick Ritchie.
All right, you're giving me Mikko Rantanen. If I went first, I was taking Mikko Rantanen. He's leaned on for tenacity in his game, and He goes to the puck, or goes to the net with the puck, and playing alongside Duchesne or MacKinnon or both for the foreseeable future is also going to help this game. Ritchie, yeah, he's going to play with Corey Perry. Yeah, he's going to play with Ryan Getzlaff, but how much longer are those guys going to be playing? If it's long-term, then the keyword long-term value in multi-cat keeper leagues, I'm going Mikko Rantanen with Duchesne and MacKinnon.
No wrong choice there, but you make a pretty sound argument. All right, the last one I'm going to give you the first choice. We got Provorov with Philadelphia Flyers and Zach Werenski with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Which defenseman do you think has the greater fantasy value long term?
I think Zach Werenski's got to take it here. He doesn't have to compete with anybody for power play time or ice time. Like, Provorov's going to be playing with Gus Dispy here, maybe, but for power play time. I was looking on Dauber's frozen pool when you brought up this question. Last year, Philly used one defenseman, either Mark Streit or Ghost, 53.74% of the time. Only 11.45% when two defensemen were on the ice together for power play. So Provorov's going to be fighting with Gus Dispy here for that number one power play spot. So I think Werenski's got it locked up for top power play quarterback, and that will do wonders for your fantasy team. So Werenski's my pick.
I like Werenski too. He went from college and dominated in the AHL playoffs, leading Lake Erie to a Calder championship. I'm not so sure I'd take him first, though. Ivan Provorov hasn't played pro in his career yet, but he led his WHL team to the Memorial Cup last year. He scored 73 points in 62 regular season games. That's 73 points as a defenseman. Philadelphia's depth chart: Gostisbehere, Michael Delzato, Strike Gudas. The only one that is on their roster right now that poses any kind of a threat to his power play time is Gostisbehere, and they can split it. They can go 1-2. Columbus has got Seth Jones and Ryan Murray. I think they might get a lot more power play looks. Seth Jones will be there for the whole season. Ivan Provorov's got a little bit of competition coming up behind him as well, though, with Sanheim and Moran and Hägg, and my pick from first episode, Philippe Myers. But all that being said, Ivan Provorov, I think, is just too good to be usurped by any of those other prospects, and I think he's more of a complete all-around defenseman than Gostisbehere. My prediction is by the end of the season, Ivan Provorov is the Philadelphia Flyers' number one defenseman for now and the next 10 years.
Wow, that's bold. I like it.
Yeah,
All right,
that's how I roll.
if you missed any of the questions we asked and want to look back at them, they'll be on our show notes at dauberprospects.com/DPR02 for episode 2. And if you want your say, we will be posting polls on these three questions and who would you rather, and let you have your say. Head to our Twitter at DPR Show and vote on your favorite prospect. Coming up next, we will be joined by our guest Russ Cohen from Sportsology right after this quick break.
This episode of Dauber Prospects Radio is sponsored by Fantrax. The classic draft leagues are back. Compete for cash prizes by drafting a team of your favorite players. Classic Draft is simple to play. Choose your game: NHL, NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball. Choose the level of play from gold, silver, or bronze. Entry fees are $100 for gold, $50 for silver, and $25 for bronze. And the leagues are all 12 teams, with the top three teams in each league earning payouts of $750 to $225 to $100 in gold level leagues. In silver, the payouts are $360, $110, and $50. And in the bronze leagues, the prize payouts are $175 to $55 to $25. All you need to do is choose your league, choose your level, and then choose your draft time. And good luck. Well, now it's time for the guest segment. This week I lined up Russ Cohen from Sportsology. Russ is a regular on the Hockey Buzz daily podcast, and he is the co-host of Hockey Prospect Radio on Sirius XM Satellite Radio and now across the TSN radio network. Welcome to the show, Russ.
Hey, thanks, Peter. Paul, I don't know where Mary is, but you know, maybe she'll show up later.
I was wondering how long it's going to take for the Peter, Paul, and Mary reference to come out in the show. Russ, on the second episode, nails it. Well
nice.
Done, sir. All right, Russ. So this is a fantasy hockey prospect show. A lot of our listeners of the show are more than average hockey fans and follow prospects for their fantasy teams. What can they do to be better scouts? What are some fundamental skills or traits that they can look for in players?
You know, one of the biggest things is when you watch on video, and sometimes you don't have a choice to, you have to understand that you're watching what the cameraman is showing you. And then if you're watching video highlights, then you're watching what the video highlight person is showing you. So they may not be showing you a bad defensive play. They may not be showing you what's happening behind the play. So first thing I always say is just know what you're watching when you're going to say something. And that's why you want to see as many different things as possible and then eventually live if you can. And so those kinds of things are important as far as just what you're looking for in a player. These days, you know, you're looking to see, do they play a 200-foot game? If they don't, are they really going to be dominant offensively? So a team may be willing to overlook that, because some teams still will overlook that, but a lot of them don't. How's the skating? But is it more than just how's the skating? Is there another gear to that person? Do they stop and start really fast? How do they turn? How elusive are they if there's someone who's smaller? You know, do they go to the dirty areas? Do they hang out in the crease? You know, all those things are important. And as far as a defenseman, I mean, if someone can really lay a body check, then you know they're a good skater, because these days it's very hard to do that. So if somebody can do that, I always say, wow, that means they're a good skater and they really can measure up a play. That's a lost art. So most of the guys, you know, are just going to play angles and strip the puck and have an active stick. So then you are looking for that. Goalies is really hard. Like goalies, it would take a half hour to tell you.
Goalies are voodoo. I don't understand them. We'll have a goalie expert like Justin Goldman on the show to do goalies for us one day.
For Kevin Woodley. Kevin Woodley's really good.
That's right. Okay, so you went over a lot of skills and components of hockey really briefly right there. What is the most important skill for a prospect to have to make it to the NHL?
The most important thing is really the desire and the willing to put in the work on and off the ice. Because when you get to a certain point, a lot of the players have the same attributes. I always say there's so many guys that could shoot 90 to 100 miles an hour. There's so many guys that could skate fast. There's so many guys that could play a brand of defense. But again, how willing are they to get better? Because what always hits a prospect in the face is after they get drafted, when they sort of hit that first rookie camp, and then they realize, okay, now I'm starting to play against some of the, you know, older veteran rookies, and they may be a step or two faster than me. And then what really hits them in the face is if they make the jump from juniors or from the AHL to the NHL, and then even if it's preseason, and then realize, okay, now this is what I'm in for. Now I really have to, you know, ratchet it up again. And that's something that's hard. That's, you know, player development helps with that with organizations. That's a big thing. But it starts with the player first. Like if the player just doesn't get that or it doesn't work out for them, the team will get blamed for having a bad draft pick. But ultimately, it's the draft pick himself that didn't work out because he didn't prepare himself.
That must be a difficult thing to view, to understand when you're watching. How can you see that without talking to the player and spending time with them?
I mean, you can't. I mean, I'll use somebody as an example, and it's a rare one because I usually wait 5 years to say whether I think a prospect is going to make it or not. And Alexander Svitov was a guy who came with a lot of hype. He was, you know, playing for the Red Army in Moscow, and he was an actual soldier. So he started playing hockey. He was a big guy, and I heard all this hype. And I remember seeing his first game at Madison Square Garden, and he couldn't skate. Like, he just couldn't skate. And that, you know, back then it wasn't the skating machine it is now in the NHL, but it was, you know, still enough that I saw with him just even having to look down where he's skating that, oh boy, this guy is just not going to be able to do this. And, you know, somebody called me, a guy who was, you know, working at a big time website, and I was working there too. And he said, hey, what'd you think of him? And I had to tell him what I thought of him. And I was like, doesn't look good. And I normally don't say that. So that was just something where that particular moment I could tell. But like I said, that's a rare case.
You also talked about the players playing in junior and then ratcheting up to play in the A and then the L. When you're scouting the different league levels, what's the difference in scouting from junior to pro? Like, let's say the CHL and the AHL. What are you looking for that's different?
Yeah, and I don't think there's any good formula. I'll use Gordy Clark as an example. He and the New York Rangers are trying to work out something where, like, if analytics were to actually work in juniors, it would have to work across the board in all the different leagues, right? So right now it currently doesn't, but they're sort of looking at something that might. So that's when he gets that, he'll feel like then he could really use it to his advantage. And I sort of agree with that. So I, when I'm watching a particular league, I have to sort of know what that kind of league is. So if it's the WHL, I know it's a very tough league, very physical. If it's the OHL, I know it's very physical, but, you know, points are, you know, not hard to come by, but you can definitely score more than in the OHL than you'll score probably in the WHL. And then if I'm looking at the queue, then I know the points are going to be higher. It's not as high as it used to be, but I know that while there is physical play, it's not going to match the other two leagues. And so, you know, you have to sort of have that in the back of your head, and then you just have to sort of just look at that player and see where you project that they'll be. And you can't do that after the first time, but you sort of get a feel for, I don't know, is he a top six guy, bottom six guy? Is he a center right now who looks like he'd be better on the wing? You have to sort of make those assessments in your mind and when you're writing down your scouting report on somebody. And so those kinds of things are pretty important. But, you know, like if I'm watching someone like Nolan Patrick and he's gotten 100 points a year, you know, those are a valid 100 points. There's no question about it. But if I'm watching a guy who's in his last year, maybe in his OHL career, and he's getting 100 points, he never did that before, and he's had 50, 60 point years, well, then I have to understand he's an overager. And is he a big guy? Is he like 6'3"? Well, maybe he's able to just dominate with that size at that level, you know, and he won't be able to dominate necessarily at the next level. That's sometimes you don't know about that. And so those are big things.
Okay, so Russ, Peter and I both live in Canada and get very little exposure to the NCAA and USHL. Who are some 2017 draft-eligible American prospects to watch for with fantasy hockey relevance?
Wow, with fantasy hockey relevance. I would say Kaylor Yamamoto. I mean, are you playing junior fantasy hockey? Like, I don't understand quite where we're going with that.
For keeper leagues or dynasty leagues, yeah.
So Kaylor Yamamoto is a heck of a talent. Now, he is only 5'8", but this kid, every time I see him, he's just scoring. He's laying the body. He's doing things that you wouldn't expect him to be able to do. And so I watch him, and I'm sort of like marveling at watching him. And so I think he's one of those guys that I'd have to look at and say, yeah, you know, Yamamoto has great keeper ability, and even though I might have to wait a while because he's only 155 pounds, I'm willing to make that wait. Jake Ottinger, goalie, he's fantastic. He could go first round this year. Going to be a BU guy. Just saw him at the All American Prospects game. Love him. I think the thing about Jake Ottinger is he's really smart. He's not sort of like your regular goalie who's got a ton of quirks. He doesn't seem to have any quirks, which is kind of weird. Even he couldn't tell me any real quirks, and I was surprised at that. And so when I get that and I see the way he plays, and he's 6'4", and he's got, you know, a huge body already, I just say, you know what? That is a guy that I have to keep an eye on, and I think he would have great keeper ability because goalies are hard to come by, and if he's already looking – it's hard to figure out who that like next great goalie is. It is. I mean, I got it right with Marc-Andre Fleury back in the day, but I don't think that was any great shakes because I think a lot of people had him on the radar. But this kid, I think, is going to be another one of them. So I look at him and I say, that's a pretty nice package. Brandon McManus is another guy who a lot of speed. This is a kid who can skate with anybody. He can score. He makes sets up plays. He's in the USHL right now. I really liked him. I mean, he was a guy at the top prospects game who I think jumped out, who, you know, we talked about him the week before for the USHL Fall Classic show. But again, you just never know what's going to happen when a guy plays in a big game like that. So that's another one where he's not the biggest guy, but man, he could just skate. And so I looked at him and I said, you know, very impressed. Very, very impressed.
So that All-American Top Prospect game was Thursday night. Who are some players that actually caught your eye in that game that you didn't really have on your list at the time?
I'm trying to think. Not on the list. That's tough because we definitely – we talked about a lot, you know, the 2 weeks before. I mean, even though Caden Primo – was on the show, I hadn't seen him live, right? I had just seen Hlinka stuff, and so I think he's a guy that I needed to see live, and he really could have had a weight on his back. If you think about it, he's a guy who's playing in front of the Philly crowd. His dad's Keith Primo. He used to play as a mite on ice in the building. So if you think about that for a minute, all of that could have been like, you know, too big for a player, or maybe they would have tried too hard, but it did, he didn't. And the All-American Prospects game is kind of interesting because it's really hard to come out of that game almost unscathed as a goalie, because it just, it's so hard. You're playing with new defensemen and all, you know, guys, you know, but guys that you're not necessarily that comfortable with. He did it. He probably had 100 people in the stands. He had like 17 saves. He really, I was impressed with the economy of his movements, the way he plays angles, doesn't panic. I really, really liked him. I thought Team LeClaire had a big edge pregame because of the goalies, because Ottinger and Primo were on the same team, and they did. I mean, that was a big reason why they won, because when you have two guys like that, that's really something. I thought Luke Martin played great. He's a Michigan guy. I watched him in the under-18s. He doesn't seem to have a ton of offense yet in his game. He says he's working on it, but everything he does well defensively, he's already got a nice size to him. I think he's around 6'2", really making great plays, skating well, getting the puck out. So I was impressed with him. I mentioned McManus. Oh, Casey Mittelstadt. I mean, he's a kid. He's going to be top 10. I mean, if he's not top 10, I'll really be shocked. I mean, every time I see him, even when he was one of the younger guys at the under-18s, he just impressed me. And so I think that's another guy who, excellent skater, gets in the flow of the play, can lead the rush, can score in the dirty areas, even though he's just under 6 feet, and he's got a great shot and great wheels. So he was another one, but I had him on the radar. It's really hard to – there wasn't anybody that played great that I would say I didn't have on the radar, simply because we had been scouring these guys for a while.
Okay. Do you think the NCAA guys have an advantage over the CHL in that players drafted from the NCAA can play in the AHL and turn pro quicker than the CHL guys?
Yeah, there's an advantage. They're only playing on the weekends, so they could literally work out the rest of the week, weight lift, and do those kinds of things. So even though they're playing less games, you see someone come out and, like Jack, just, you know, immensely physically fit and strong. Guys come out of the CHL and they're definitely fit, but they're not as strong because they don't have the time to work out. Like if you look at some players now, you'll see that sometimes, like even Travis Konechny has put on some weight and some muscle, but sometimes if the playoffs go too long, like for Mitch Marner, they can't. Like they literally have a month and a half, 2 months. What could you do then? You know, so they definitely have an edge. I think we're going to see guys staying, you know, less and less time in college ranks, though. I don't think you're going to see as many graduating. But if you come out of there like someone like BC, you really come out of there, you know, fully developed. You're a man, and you could be ready to go if everything's right. And so it's different, you know, when you're 22 than if you're an 18-year-old. So there's an edge there, and then there's an edge just even if you go for a couple of years, just for that extra little boost you'll get if you go to the right college that has just an exceptional training program. The CHL did try and narrow the gap, right, with that summer training that they let a guy pay for, which I think covers about 2 weeks. And it's something, but it's still not enough because these guys are literally, when they're in college, when they're on campus, those guys are at their beck and call.
Russ, let's talk about prospects in the NHL now. All the fantasy guides magazines are out now, and they all have the usual suspects this year, like Laine and Rantanen and Strome as rookie candidates for the Calder. Who do you see as some potential prospects who aren't getting as much publicity that could make the NHL this year and have an impact?
Well, let's see. I think Anthony Mantha right off the bat jumped out to me with games that he got in, but his body was working a little faster than his brain could, and so we didn't really get to see the full impact of Anthony Mantha, but I think he's a guy coming into this year who could be extremely dangerous for the Red Wings. If you put him with Larkin and you sort of leave him for a while, I think that could be a really great place for him to be. So I would look for him. I would look for Pavel Zacha. I don't know why nobody's talking about him. He had a heck of a year because, you know, he literally played in juniors. Then he played in the final game for the Devils. I think he had 2 assists. Then he got to play in the AHL playoffs and did really well there until he got hurt. And then, you know, his season came to an end. A heck of a year. I saw him at the Upper Deck NHLPA Rookie Showcase. And he not only looks bigger, but he is just faster. He looks like a complete player in the sense that up top to bottom, physically fit, the way he skates, I don't think there's that much that he can't do. So I would look at him as another one who should be getting talked about. But he's in New Jersey, and so maybe he won't. But, boy, if they put him with Taylor Hall.
All right, Russ. Thank you very much for joining the show on our second episode. I mentioned that you're on a couple of shows and that your site is Sportsology. Tell our listeners a little bit more about what you have coming out. What's going on with you right now?
Sure. So we have Hockey Prospect Radio that's always on the weekend on TSN and NHL Network Radio. I do a show called Off the Post on Blog Talk Radio. That's on Friday nights at 11 p.m. with Anthony Mingioni and Michael Jello. That's a fun show. We usually cover mostly the NHL, but we sort of, you know, we'll delve into junior stuff. And, you know, I did talk about the Top Prospects game just because I was there. I have a baseball book coming out, but it's not out yet, and it's going to be about the dead ball era. So I, you know, what happens is I write baseball and hockey books. When it's hockey season, I write about baseball. When it's baseball season, I write about hockey. And so that's how it sort of works for me. And so, and I still have a Philadelphia Flyers book that is fairly new because it came out late in the season last year, and it's called Philadelphia Flyers Images of Sports. It's a photo book, and we're really happy with that too. So those are the things that I'm closely working on, and then I pop up in other places every once in a while.
Sounds great. And you can find Russ on Twitter at Sportsology is his handle. Russ, thanks very much.
Hey, thanks, Peter.
Well, Peter, another episode in the books. We'd like to thank Russ Cohen for joining us today, another excellent prospect fantasy mind to talk to us about scouting and prospects. We also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to produce a podcast, so please continue to listen. Check out episode 2 show notes at dauberprospects.com/DPR02. Email any prospect fantasy questions to prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. And subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review and share our podcast with anybody who may be interested. Also, you can follow us at @DPR_show on Twitter, as well as myself at @Zwombag and Peter Harling at @PHarling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.